From PRI, Public Radio International, and KCRW Santa Monica, this is To the Point.
Day two for the Democrats. Where's the red meat? Hello again, I'm Armin Alney, and this is To the Point from Public Radio International, a daily look at the issues Americans care about most, reporting today from the Democratic National Convention in Denver. Last night, Teddy Kennedy passed the torch to a new generation, and the Obamas were the all-American family. Tonight, Hillary Clinton will address the convention, and the world will learn how serious the split with Obama supporters really is. On To the Point, we'll talk with delegates in both camps. Are the media fanning a controversy that's only skin deep? Keynote speaker Mark Warner says he's not an attack dog. Are the Democrats missing their chance for an offensive against John McCain and George Bush? On Reporter's Notebook later on, humorist Harry Shearer talks about politics and parties. First, here's the news.
Support for To the Point comes from subscribers of KCRW Santa Monica and from the Public Radio International Program Fund, whose contributors include the Ford Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
Hello again, Warren Alney, back with To the Point. Last night it was Teddy Kennedy and Michelle Obama. Tonight the keynote speaker is Virginia's former Governor Mark Warner, but the star of the show will be Hillary Clinton. How divided are the Democrats? Why haven't the delegates and the audience on TV heard more about John McCain and George Bush? On Reporter's Notebook, humorist and political commentator Harry Shearer talks about three simultaneous conventions going on before our very eyes. John Mercurio is executive editor of The Hotline, an internet publication of the National Journal, moving from one tent to another across the parking lot here in the press area within this vast perimeter around the Pepsi Center. John, good to have you with us.
It's great to be here. I feel very safe in here in the perimeter.
You're about as safe as you could possibly be, I think, right, anywhere in the world, and there are helicopters up above just to remind you of that. What about last night? Teddy Kennedy, an extraordinary performance and a moving moment, obviously, just because of his medical condition.
Sure, and I think that, you know, I think Democrats last night, they had a lot of positive moments, but they also had an overall weakness that I think they're still sort of struggling with. You saw, again, the phenomenal performance by Teddy Kennedy. Really surprising to see how well he was able, given his physical condition, to speak and to really effectively make the case for the future of the Democratic Party. The dream lives on, I think, is the quote from him. And also an incredible performance by Michelle Obama. I think a lot of people really unfamiliar with how with who she is and how she was going to perform. And you got to hear a lot about the story of Barack Obama. The problem for Democrats that you heard a lot of griping about behind the scenes was that there was no red meat. There were very few mentions of President Bush, very few mentions of John McCain or the Republican Party. And that was John Kerry's biggest fatal flaw, I think, in 2004, was the decision, a very strategic decision on their part, not to attack the incumbent president. By not doing that, and by having Mark Warner already saying that he doesn't want to be a red meat partisan tonight, I think, you know, could spell trouble down the road for the Democrats.
Is what was a fatal flaw, or at least a real problem for John Kerry, that they didn't get the contrast question up in front of the viewers as soon as they possibly could. Something that Obama was, to a certain extent, stuck with, because people know less about him than they knew about John Kerry. He is, after all, the first African-American, and there are all these questions that they have to try to resolve.
That's true. I mean, he's very unknown. He has to establish not just an understanding among voters, but a comfort level that clearly doesn't exist, especially among this working-class white group of voters that Hillary Clinton was able to draw strong support from during the primary. He's still trying to resolve these divisions in his own party because of Hillary Clinton's supporters, and that's clearly what he was trying to do last night with his wife's speech.
Would it appear that maybe it is Hillary Clinton's job tonight to turn that around? Maybe she'll be the one that comes up with the red meat.
Oh, I think she'll clearly be the one that comes up with the attack lines against President Bush. She was very good at slicing and dicing the Republicans during the Democratic primary. And, you know, I think right now you're seeing, I've talked to several of her supporters this week, they're angry. They're angry that John McCain has taken her words, not just her words, but her television ads from the Democratic primary against Barack Obama. And they've decided to use them very strategically, I think, against Obama in this election. The 3 a.m. ad that became so famous and I think was very effective during the Democratic primary is now a new McCain campaign ad with his slogan at the end. I think she tonight becomes the real focus of people who are looking for that partisan red meat to really motivate the Democrats to unite behind Obama against a common enemy.
We're going to hear in a minute from delegates on both sides, but there have been those in the media who are saying this is a media creation to a certain extent, that we're, because there's nothing else happening at the convention, looking around for stories and trying to find opposition between Obama and Clinton delegates.
Well, that's the problem. I think, you know, for the past 30 or 40 years, you know, there hasn't been real news that's taken place at these conventions, and so that you do, I think, see a lot of media, a lot of reporters looking for stories that aren't necessarily stories. I do think there are divisions within the party. I do think that there are many Hillary Clinton supporters. We see that in polls. I see that anecdotally in talking to Democrats. But I do think that you do have certain elements of the media who are drawn to the drama and are focusing on it, perhaps, and sort of elevating it to a level of discussion that it might not necessarily require.
Question about procedure and what happens on the floor and what viewers will see looking on television. Tomorrow will be the time when the candidates are formally nominated. What's going to take place, and to what extent will Clinton supporters, do you think, try to have a roll call vote so that the fact that she has so many delegates here will be a very public fact?
Well, I think that will be a very public fact. What happens tomorrow during the roll call vote, this takes place before the vice presidential nominee Joe Biden addresses the convention and accepts the vice presidential nomination, is that every state goes through and conducts a roll call vote and then announces the totals. And Clinton supporters are obviously going to feel compelled to vote for her. There will be a tally that we get at the end. There will actually be a number, I believe, that comes out that reflects how many of those delegates then support Hillary Clinton. She will then, as she already has, essentially, order her delegates or ask her delegates to their delegate support to Barack Obama. It's a very technical process, and really at the end of the day all it is a victory for Barack Obama, and hopefully a sign of unity for the Democratic Party, for Democrats.
But it will be made very clear exactly where all the delegates stand and who they voted for. John Mercurio, really good to have you with us. Thanks a lot. Executive editor of The Hotline.
Great to be here.
In a moment, we'll talk with supporters of Obama and Clinton on To the Point from Denver.
To the Point thanks Factiva from Dow Jones for its use of Factiva.com. With news and information from 10,000 global sources, Factiva is a resource for companies whose continued success rests upon timely strategic news on their industry, competitors, and themselves.
Warren Olney back with To the Point. The National Convention is supposed to unify Democrats around the presidential candidacy of Barack Obama, but media coverage continues to emphasize the continuing tension with supporters of Hillary Clinton, as we were talking earlier with John Mercurio, the executive editor of The Hotline. Sasha Millstone is a delegate from Boulder, Colorado. Sasha, we're delighted to be in your state, and thank you very much for that.
Well, thank you for coming to the state, and thank you for having me.
You are a Hillary Clinton delegate, and you're an unhappy delegate, as I understand.
Well, I'm a delegate that is a little confused by why we have had to go through such a complex process just to get a very standard roll call vote. You know, Democrats have a long history of coming into conventions with multiple candidates and having roll call votes. Since 1932, there's only been four conventions that I'm aware of where we didn't have a roll call vote, and most of those were incumbents with no challengers. So it's a typical process.
What about your own feelings and the likelihood that you will or will not vote for the person who will, in fact, be the nominee of this convention, and that's Barack Obama?
I'm not, I haven't stated, you know, whether I would or would not vote for Barack Obama. I'm still in a wait and see mode. I feel that today is all about Hillary Clinton. It's all about acknowledging the fact that she has done what no American woman has ever done and what very few American men have done. And I want to see her celebrated for her 18 million votes.
But you might vote for John McCain in November?
I am at a place right now where I am just going to wait and see how things go at this convention and beyond this convention through Election Day. I feel that the primary process was very flawed, and I feel that there was a great deal of sexism in this campaign that our party leaders did not stand up and speak out against while it was happening. And so this is, you know, I'm a long-time Democratic activist and fundraiser. I've been doing this for almost 25 years, and I feel very disappointed in my party at this moment.
Sasha Millstone, again, a delegate from Boulder, Colorado, supporting Hillary Clinton. Tom Warren is an Obama delegate. He's also a member of the Democratic Convention Rules Committee from Ohio. Question of rules brought up just a moment ago by Sasha Millstone. How do you respond to them?
Well, first of all, I'd like to congratulate Hillary Clinton on the tremendous, tremendous race for the presidency. And I think that it's wonderful that we are going to be celebrating that accomplishment today. I think that there has been quite a bit of focus on the issue of unhappiness among supporters of Hillary Clinton. And I can tell you from my own personal experience being here at the convention that I really haven't seen it. I think that conventions are a great way of bringing all the people that have been working on campaigns together for one convention, for one party. And what I have seen, certainly through our shared experiences here, through the speeches that have been given and that I know that are going to be given by Senator Clinton and by former President Clinton tomorrow, that we are all Democrats and Democrats first, and that our principal goal is to have Barack Obama and Joe Biden elected the president and vice president, because we cannot afford another 4 years of Bush McCain.
Why not, though, have a competition, as Sasha Millstone suggests, a vote on the floor, as has been done in so many other conventions for so long?
Well, I will tell you, I know that the Obama and Clinton campaigns have been working together very, very hard to craft a process that is reflective of what Senator Clinton has accomplished and is also reflective of what, as a matter of party unity, we want to do as going forward. So having seen through my work on the Rules Committee and through my experiences here, I know that Senator Clinton has been working extremely hard, and her campaign staff has been working extremely hard with Senator Obama and the Obama folks to craft a convention that is appropriately reflective of all of Senator Clinton's accomplishments as well as of Senator Obama's accomplishments.
Tom Warren from Ohio. Sasha, back to you from Colorado. How many people do you think there are that feel the way you do?
I can't give you a number, but I can tell you there are quite a few.
Have you caucused? Have you gotten together? Have you had meetings, that sort of thing?
We have various organizations. For example, this button that I'm wearing with 300 on it. This is an organization that sort of spontaneously developed of Clinton delegates who got together and decided that they would put the petition together and have at least 300 people sign it so that we would guarantee that Hillary had an opportunity to have her name put in to nomination.
If she chooses to sign the petition herself.
If she chose to. Now,
we still don't know whether that's going to happen or not. Is
well,
that right?
Well, the agreement has been made that there will be a roll call vote. We just don't know what the rules of that are going to be.
And Tom Warren, can you tell us?
I don't have any more information, Warren.
Okay. Also with us today, Larry Yon. He is another Clinton delegate. He comes from Texas. And Larry Yon, good to have you with us.
Thank you so much.
How do you feel as a Clinton delegate?
Very excited. This is a great convention. Senator Clinton is an outstanding individual. She would have been a great president. We are going to move forward from this convention. We're going to have a very united party. Senator Obama is going to be the next president of the United States.
How do you feel about this division within the delegates at the convention, the kind of thing that Sasha Millstone is telling us about? And do you think it's going to we're going to see a lot of it on the floor tonight and perhaps even tomorrow?
I think what you're going to see tonight on the floor is a convention of delegates who are pledged to Senator Obama and delegates who are pledged to Senator Clinton, who are going to celebrate Hillary Clinton together. And then as the convention progresses, you're going to see all of those delegates also celebrate Senator Obama as the nominee. Personally, I understand the position that Shasta is talking about and has taken, because the commitment to Senator Clinton is a very strong emotional commitment, a very deep-held feeling on the part of the people from Texas who are supporting her. And you have to get past the emotional commitment, and you have to understand it on a different level in order to make your decision to fully support what is going to occur. That takes time, but it will happen.
You're past it. You're for sure going to vote for Senator Obama?
There's no question in my mind.
Both at the convention and in November.
I'm going to vote for Senator Clinton when that opportunity arises on the roll call vote, and we will have a roll call vote, and I'm convinced of that. And once that is taken care of and history has been made and recorded, as it should be, that she got 18 million votes in this primary, once that is done, we're going to join hands together behind Senator Obama.
So you will allow yourself to be defeated, if it were, as it were.
I don't think you could call any of this a defeat. What the Democratic Party has done with these two outstanding individuals is to involve more people than we have ever had in primaries before. In my state, it was an incredible turnaround. We outvoted Republicans tremendously, and we're going to outvote them again and again and again. And what we're going to do with this type of the ticket that we're going to have is to win down ballot races so that the party is going to be stronger at the local level and at the state level, and we're going to win the White House.
There was a huge turnout in Texas. Hillary Clinton won big, but now the polls are showing that something like 27% of the people who voted for her are not at all sure they're going to vote for Barack Obama, and in fact may well vote for John McCain. You worried about that in Texas?
No, I'm not really worried about it because, you know, you can take a poll at any moment in time and it's going to be different than it was the day before. What we've got to do, those of us who are working hard in local elections, is to work with those people who are going to be disaffected and to make positive that they understand we're talking about the future of this nation. We're talking about a constitution that's been trampled on that needs to be restored. And the only way it can be restored is if we put a party in power that respects the constitution and doesn't trample on it.
Okay, some red meat of the kind that people are complaining hasn't been seen enough of at this convention. Sasha Millstone, let me go back to you again, delegate from Boulder, Colorado, not at all sure that you like the way things are going, to say the least. You created quite a storm here in this state, and at one point the state party threatened to strip your status as a delegate. You didn't go along with that. How lasting is the emotion from that particular battle?
Oh, I didn't take that emotionally at all. I was really shocked when the state party sent me that letter demanding that I come in and talk to them about why I should remain a delegate. And it's past us now, so it doesn't bother me. But I'd like to go back to this notion of rules. And I think that one of the biggest problems that we're dealing with here is that the primary process is very flawed. This primary process had all kinds of problems from the beginning with the shenanigans with Florida and Michigan.
Well, wait a minute. Now, why were those shenanigans? They didn't obey the rules, right? They didn't, consequently, they were denied their delegates. Wasn't that the way it was supposed to happen?
I don't want to re-engage in that debate. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say it was a controversy that many people do not feel settled about how it ended up with Hillary Clinton actually losing delegates. So that the Rules Bylaws Committee was a problem. The caucuses, we're talking about Texas. Here we have a state that voted clearly for Hillary Clinton in the primary, and miraculously that same night she lost the caucus by a very large margin. That problem with the caucuses needs to be examined and corrected all the way through this process. The superdelegates, when they're charged, look and see who is the strongest nominee against John McCain in the fall. And I'm sorry to say, but I was very disappointed that the superdelegates don't seem to have looked at the electoral map, which is still showing that Hillary Clinton is stronger against John McCain. So all I can say about rules is I agree. I am. That's why I say I'm disappointed in my party. I feel rules do need to be followed.
Okay, Larry Young, you are from Texas. We didn't get into this dispute about the difference between the caucuses and the vote there. What about it? Was it fair?
We have some work to do in Texas on our primary system. And fortunately, the party has established a hearing process where we're going to have hearings all over the state to ask our Democrats how they want to conduct future elections. I was a bit surprised at the reversal, if you will, from the caucus from the primary vote to the caucus vote. However, the important thing that people need to understand is that essentially in Texas, it was our delegation here is a 50-50 delegation. Senator Clinton lost a few delegates at the state level at the at-large position, and they came out with a small minority.
But it did happen pretty much the way Sasha Millstone said, that she won the primary big time and then came the caucuses and she didn't get the same proportion of delegates.
She won the primary. I'm not sure I would describe it as big time, but okay. She won the primary. And one would think that when you win the primary, you get the delegates. So our system does have flaws in it, and we have got to work on them, but we're taking the proactive approach on doing that now. And there are ways that it can be resolved. And I expect that to happen within the next year.
Okay, thank you for correcting me. It's my mistake on how big the margin was, but the turnout was certainly enormous. No question.
The turnout was fantastic.
Okay. Tom Warren, back to you. You're on the Democratic Convention Rules Committee. The kinds of rules we're talking about now have to be decided state by state. What about the convention? Is it going to be different next time around than it is this time as a result of anything that's happening here?
Well, Warren, one of the things that the Rules Committee did was establish a commission for the next election. And the very types of issues that are frustrating to Sasha are just the sort of things that that commission is going to study on a going forward basis. The commission is going to be studying both the caucus process as well as the issue of superdelegates. So that many of the issues that Sasha is raising are things that are going to be discussed. And I think it's important to reiterate that that commission, that the proposal for that commission, was one that was crafted by both Senator Clinton and Senator Obama, and that the important thing is not, I believe, to dwell on the past, but to think about the future, and the future in two respects. First of all, the next 67 days going till November and making sure that we get the Democrats elected to the White House, and then to reflect all of the issues that Sasha is concerned about, to talk about those with all of the folks that have been involved and engaged in this campaign, a contentious campaign, certainly, one that was very close, but one to which that which everybody should be working together on a going forward basis.
Sasha Millstone, longtime Democrat, fundraiser, been involved with the party. Is this really important enough to get you to vote for John McCain, given all of the issues that they are going to be raised here at this convention?
You know, it's interesting. People are asking me that a lot. I never said that I would vote for John McCain. There are options besides voting for John McCain that include not voting for Barack Obama. I have not decided what I'm going to do yet.
Just sort of a measure of your frustration then, rather than a threat to say, wait a minute, I'm not going to be a Democrat anymore, I'm going to vote Republican?
No, I'm one option I'm considering is whether I want to change to an independent. I am really upset with my party. And by the way, I am so glad that the Rules Committee is considering these matters. And I will tell you that I believe if Hillary delegates had not made a fairly large point about these matters, they would not be being discussed.
A large plank is a great way to put it, Tom Warren. What about it? Have they forced, in fact, the changes?
Well, I don't think it's a question of being forced. I think these are legitimate issues that are being raised that really haven't come into focus before because we've never had an election that's been quite this close between two extremely qualified candidates to be president. So these issues have come into focus now, and it's important so that we don't have this level of frustration again in the future, that we address those issues. But I think as Democrats, we have a responsibility now to come together and get the job done and get John McCain defeated.
Larry Yon, just a few seconds for an important question. But is this dispute at the convention and the way it's going to be resolved here going to hurt the Democrats in November?
No, it's going to strengthen the Democrats in November. The Democratic Party is a party of a lot of people and a lot of ideas. When you bring those ideas together, you come up with the best one and you go forward with it. That's what's going to happen here this week.
Larry Yon, a Clinton delegate from Texas, thanks very much to you. Tom Warren, Obama delegate, member of the Democratic Convention Rules Committee from Ohio. And Sasha Millstone, a Clinton delegate from Boulder, Colorado. Thank you all very much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Warren.
More in a moment on what to expect tonight. On Reporter's Notebook, we'll talk with Harry Shearer on To the Point from PRI.
A complete archive of past programs is available online at kcrw.com/to the point. You can also order a CD copy by calling 1-888-600-5279.
Warren Olney back with To the Point. Once again, speaking to you from Denver, the Democratic National Convention out here in the security perimeter outside the Pepsi Center. We've had a couple of guests here in the studio. First, before we go to them, let's listen to a little bit of what Michelle Obama had to say during what I think everybody regarded was an extraordinary delivery yesterday, or last night, I should say, to the convention coming after Ted Kennedy, who he himself stunned, I think, the entire convention and everybody who was watching because he was able to deliver the speech let alone as energetically and effectively as he did. Here's a little bit from Michelle Obama.
In this great country where a girl from the south side of Chicago can go to college and law school, and the son of a single mother from Hawaii can go all the way to the White House, that we committed ourselves to building the world as it should be.
Again, that's just a bit of what Michelle Obama had to say last night. Peniel Joseph is an associate professor of African and Afro-American Studies at Brandeis University. He's author of Waiting Till the Midnight Hour, A Narrative History of Black Power in America, and a forthcoming book, From Black Power to Barack Obama. Professor Joseph, you also have a website. Tell us what it is.
Yeah, it's www.penielejoseph.com. That's Penielejoseph.com.
Okay, good for you. How did you feel about the way in which Michelle Obama presented herself, the way in which the Obama family was presented last night at the convention?
I think it's an extraordinary time in American history. One of the things that I talk about in this forthcoming book is what I call racial vertigo. And by racial vertigo, I mean the disruption of the color line in American society. W.E.B. Du Bois famously said that the color line was the main problem of the 20th century, meaning the separation between blacks and whites. And the way in which the Obamas upset that color line is by placing African Americans in positions that no one, even black Americans, ever thought they could be in. So in a way, what we're seeing is this kind of vertigo that's seeing this black woman who's 46 years old, who's on the cusp, perhaps, of becoming the first African American first lady. That really shocks all of our senses. So what the Obamas are trying to do is say, hey, instead of having this racial vertigo, we're just like any other ordinary Americans. At times it comes off as trite, it comes off as hackneyed, but it's really necessary because middle America has never seen this. African Americans did not believe Barack Obama would be the presidential nominee of the Democratic Party 18 months ago. People were questioning his racial authenticity. People were saying, is he black enough? Now they've embraced him on an unprecedented level to the point where if you're black and you criticize Obama, the community, as some people have found out, really become very, very upset. So what we're seeing is something that is almost surreal in American history. I think the world has an easier time accepting this whole notion of a black president than Americans. So the allusions to the Brady Bunch, the references to being all American, that might sound trite and hackneyed, especially for liberals and people on the left. But Americans have never seen this kind of person before. The closest example that we have is basically Bill Cosby and The Cosby Show, which was a fantasy. It was about a black man who was a doctor. He had an African-American wife who was perhaps the only black female partner at a prestigious New York law firm. And they had five extraordinary kids. And so the Obamas are trying to turn that fantasy into a reality. And, you know, at times it's going to be a little bit cliched. At times it's going to seem a little bit forced. But they have to take the rough edges off. And by rough edges, we're really talking about the politics of race. So that when we see Obama, more Americans see a politician than see a black politician, which is why the candidacy and the campaign, except for the March 2008 speech on race, which was forced by Reverend Wright, has stayed away from race to try to win. So Obama, in a way, people say, is he tough enough to be president? He's really one of the most ruthless politicians we've ever seen in terms of his quest for power. And sometimes people on the left don't understand that. Even though people on the left claim to want power so they can influence public policy, they want a perfect candidate who has yet to exist.
You better be ruthless if you're going to succeed in Chicago politics.
Absolutely.
That's a side of Barack Obama, I think you're right, that a lot of people haven't seen. But let me ask you a little bit more about what went on last night. Barack Obama, of course, is multi-ethnic. He's grew up in Hawaii. He's lived in a lot of different places. Michelle Obama came from the south side of Chicago. No question about the legacy of slavery and all of the history of discrimination and so on in her background. And yet the way she presented herself last night, does that seem genuine to other African Americans? Is she liable to get to the same kind of criticism that he was earlier on?
Well, I think it's genuine to the extent that they want to win. The history of race relations in this country is ugly. It's a tragic past. It's a ugly contemporary present. If you're going to be blunt and bold and talk about the systemic underprivileging of African Americans that goes on, whether it's the prison industrial complex or AIDS, HIV rates, or health care, or education, and all these disparities, to be honest with you, white Americans don't want to hear it. In The Audacity of Hope, what Barack Obama talks about is the exhaustion of white guilt. He's right about that. Does that mean that people shouldn't talk about the systemic nature of racism in the country? No. But if you're trying to run for president, that has to be glossed over. And that's what they're doing. They're really presenting this version of the American dream, but in Technicolor this time, starring the Obamas.
Professor Joseph Peniel at Brandeis University. Peniel Joseph. I beg your pardon, at Brandeis University. And again, the website?
www.penielejoseph.com.
Okay, I'm not going to leave that out. Good to have you with us. We'll come back to you. Michael Tomosky is also with us here in our little cubbyhole in the big tent outside the Pepsi Center. He's editor of Guardian America. That's an online publication. He's former editor of The American Prospect, regarded as a liberal magazine. And Michael Tomosky, good to have you with us.
Always a pleasure.
I want to talk about red meat with you, but before I do, I'm just very interested in your take on what we heard from Professor Joseph.
Yeah, you know, Peniel used the words trite and hackneyed. I say, with regard to this, she couldn't possibly have been trite and hackneyed enough. And I wrote a thing on my website that said that she should even have put more schmaltz in there. look, let's think back over the course of the past 16, 17 months. Last year, Barack Obama and family did seem to be a kind of African-American family that transcended race. He did seem to be a kind of candidate who transcended race, to use, again, a somewhat hackneyed phrase. Then came Jeremiah Wright and some of the other things that we know that happened over the course of the spring of this year while he was in intense competition with Hillary Clinton. And, you know, a lot of that went away. Okay? So that's point number one. Point number two.
The transcendent part went away.
Yes, that went away. Point number two. I may not be giving my fellow white Americans enough credit here, but I suspect that a lot of white Americans from quote-unquote average households don't know that many black people, aren't friends with that many black families, don't understand really in some way, just because, not because they're racist, but because they've simply never thought about it, that African American families have the same values they do and want to go to Disneyland just like they do, and so on and so forth. So I think everything she could have possibly done last night to drive that home in as obvious a way as possible, she should have done. And, you know, she did a lot of it. I actually think she could have done a little bit more. But, I mean, she's a very impressive and distinguished woman. So I think, you know, I think she was a big success last night. So I'm not saying that she wasn't. But I think that this idea of, you know, the Huxtables come to real life, is something it's a very important trope, and it's tougher for Obama post Jeremiah Wright, and it's something that they need to drive home this week, in addition to some other things.
Even though, Professor Joseph, you said that was a fantasy, the Huxtables.
Well, the Huxtables are both a fantasy and a reality. What I mean by fantasy is this. The Cosby Show premieres in September of 1984. It's on for 8 years. It's the number one show for 4 or 5 years. Within the context of Reagan's America, Ronald Reagan wins a second term to the White House in November of 1984, saying that it's morning again in America. For African Americans, it was really closer to midnight in terms of the majority of African Americans. Certainly, there was a small slice of African Americans who did really, really well. I think the statistics now, out of 40 million African Americans, are something like 1 or 2%. Earn over $100,000 a year or more. So the black middle class or upper middle class is very, very tiny. So they have their own reality, and there's an African-American bourgeoisie that has membership to clubs like the Boule and Jack and Jill, and some of them are multimillionaires, some are billionaires like Oprah Winfrey, but relative to the 40 million population that we have in the country, the demographics of African-Americans who are doing extraordinarily well are pretty low. What's interesting
about values and aspirations might be a different story.
Well, in terms of values and aspirations, what's interesting about what Obama is trying to do, he's really trying to say that the politics of the 1960s and the cultural wars of the 1960s are really over, and we're going to write a new chapter in the great American story. The problem is this. In terms of public policy and substance, if you look at, and one of the things I talk about in my forthcoming book, the 1968 Kerner Commission report, over 600 pages, which was really written by politicians. You know, it was chaired by Otto Kerner, who was the then governor of Illinois, which is Obama's home state. The recommendations after the riots of the 1960s was for massive social programs in healthcare, in education, in keeping families safe, in rebuilding urban America. Lyndon Johnson refused to meet with his own commission. 40 years later, we've got Barack Obama as the first African-American president, presidential nominee of a major party, which is extraordinary. But in terms of public policy prescriptions, he's not talking about rebuilding urban America. He's not talking about substantive policy prescriptions to transform American democracy. And he's not engaging in a racial dialogue as blunt and as bold as we had in 1968. So what's interesting about Obama, we're seeing a type of racial progress, but it's a kind of racial progress where his individual achievement is supposed to substitute for the collective racial progress of Black America. And that's very, very dangerous. And this is not an attack on Obama's candidacy. This is saying that what is this candidacy going to mean to the majority of African Americans if it's successful? Because Jimmy Carter said last night that he felt it almost means the end of racism. Some Americans are going to feel, if they elect a Black president, that that's it. This is the reparations that Black people have wanted. You've got it, Obama, right? And is that going to be enough to transform the lives of Black people who are in prison, Black people who are going hungry, Black people who are living in urban America in terrible conditions, Black people who have extraordinarily skyrocketing rates of HIV and AIDS, Black people who are illiterate?
Again, Peniel Joseph is a professor at Brandeis University. Love to continue this conversation and get Michael Tomasky's views, but we have another guest who has been waiting patiently on the phone, not here in the booth with us where we can all exchange expressions and look at one another. Aaron Barnhart is a television critic for the Kansas City Star. He blogs about all things TV at tvbarn.com. And Aaron Barnhart, thanks very much to you for joining us tonight.
Plugging my blog, too, Warren.
What about the way that this convention is coming out on television so far? What have you seen? We've heard a lot already from our other guests, Peniel Joseph and Michael Tomasky.
Well, I really resonate with some of the things that Dr. Joseph has said. But the most striking thing about Michelle Obama's speech last night was the reception it got on the cable news channels. Now, I do think that if Michelle Obama had come out and delivered a very strident, critical message, or if the first night had been dominated by attacks on the Republican Party, as some of these pundits on cable news have been urging the Democrats to do every night of the convention, I think that there would have been a very different interpretation of Michelle Obama's speech. It would have been that she was too harsh and she was bringing up the ghosts of Jeremiah Wright. I think, in other words, that for every action up there on the stage of the Pepsi Center, there's an equal and opposite reaction in the news media, who, after all, are, you know, they're looking for a good story. But what was striking to me, and the reason I think that she made the smart choice doing what she did, and the organizers what they did, was the reaction not just on MSNBC, which has obviously been very favorable toward Barack Obama's candidacy all along, and CNN as well, but over on Fox News Channel. I was amazed at how the panelists positively climbed over each other to praise Michelle Obama's speech. You know, it started out with Juan Williams, who of course is a commentator on NPR as well, and talking about how moving it was to hear her talking about a father who demanded the best from his children and demanded that they get into the best schools, which I think is something that a lot of African American families, at least middle class, can resonate with. But so can a lot of non-African-American middle-class households. And so then Fred Barnes, very staunch conservative commentator, you know, said, well, it wasn't Gettysburg, but it was a very impressive speech, and around the table it went. So I think that in terms of controlling the message, what they wanted to do last night was to project a certain image of the Obamas, and it was incredibly successful. And I want to just expand upon something that Dr. Joseph said. This is an organization that few Democrats have said that they have seen in their lifetimes in terms of its professionalism, its organization, and its muscle and its political savvy. It's sort of Chicago South Side bare knuckles pragmatism for getting the job done. And I think that extends to the image that the Obama campaign projects everywhere it goes, including on the stage of the Democratic National Convention, and a word and a person's name that came up just a couple of minutes ago, but has been sort of missing from this discussion, is Oprah Winfrey. You know, the Huxtables were really a family for the 1980s, but Oprah Winfrey has been this race transcendent media superstar for most of the two decades since then. And while a lot is talked about, you know, Oprah's role as a person who empowers her audience and talks a lot about being the best you can be and so forth. There's also in the books that she chooses and in the shows that she does a lot of emphasis on coping with adversity. Oprah Winfrey's story is one of overcoming tremendous adversity as a young girl, and then battling, of course, in adulthood her weight issues and things like that, and living that very openly with her audience. And there's also this sense that Oprah projects, especially since she's made $1 billion, about living the good life and how everyone can live the good life. So in a sense, the Obamas are taking more of a page, I think, from them than from the Huxtables. They're not claiming that they have lived this perfect life. They're not claiming that there aren't tensions in their lifestyle, which were somewhat brought out in the Jeremiah Wright controversy. And they talk about their struggles in their early years of their marriage. So I think Oprah Winfrey really is the model here for this because ultimately, at the end of the day, Oprah is a safe, accessible personality that you want to emulate, and that would be the Obamas as well.
Aaron Barnhart, again, is a television critic for the Kansas City Star. Michael Tomasky, we've only got a minute left, but I really wanted to get to you because not only do you think that there should have been more schmaltz laid on last night than there was, you're also one of those who's saying, wait, where's the red meat? What about John McCain? What about George Bush?
Yeah.
Do you think we're going to get that?
Oh, I think we're going to get it, but, you know, I do think there should have been a little bit of it last night by someone else, some venerated senator or something like that. Look, how many people are going to cast their vote on the basis of the First Lady, the potential First Lady? Less than 1%. The jobs of this convention, the main jobs of this convention are twofold, one positive and one negative. The negative one, tie George Bush around John McCain's neck and say to the American people, you cannot have, you do not want 4 more years of this. The positive job is not really, the main job is not to normalize the Obama family. The main positive job is to say, here's my plan for America, here's what we're going to do, and do that compellingly and clearly.
Okay, we'll see what happens next. Michael Tomasky of Guardian America, Aaron Burkhart with the Kansas City Star, and Peniel Joseph, professor at Brandeis University. Many thanks to all of you. We'll be back in a moment with Reporter's Notebook on To the Point.
For more information about To the Point or to sign up for the free podcast, visit kcrw.com/to the point.
Warren Olney back with Reporter's Notebook on To the Point. Harry Shearer is well known on public radio for Le Show, distributed internationally. His latest book is Not Enough Indians. He's a writer, humorist, musician, and actor with a not very secret gift for political commentary. His latest album is Songs of the Bushmen, and we know who Bush is.
Mm-hmm. And the Bushmen are everybody who works for him.
What about this convention? You had a big party on Sunday night at Jambalaya from New Orleans, which is your second favorite city after Los Angeles.
They're contending for primacy as they're kind of like Hillary and Obama, you know, jostling for the top spot. The party went great. The purpose, there's going to be one at both conventions. The purpose is it's put on by Friends of New Orleans, which is an organization that advocates for New Orleans nationally. And the purpose is to say, hey, there's unfinished business in the city that the feds flooded with the defective levee system, and both parties have been ignoring it. So the attempt is to show the obvious that New Orleans still knows how to throw a party, but also to get back on the agenda of one or the other party.
Everybody says so far it's the best party that there has been at the Democratic convention. You need to know that.
That's
how
good.
Important are the parties?
I guess they're pretty important in terms of getting people into a space. We had a forum during the afternoon with James Carville, both Mary and Mitch Landrieu and Walter Isaacson of the Aspen Institute and me. And we drew, you know, mainly New Orleanians who wanted to hear 2 hours of serious talk, and the party drew thousands. So that's the answer.
And that's where the music was.
And that's where the music was, and that's where the food was.
What about the conventions? You say there's more than one convention going on here.
Yeah, there's three conventions here. There's the lobbyists' convention, and you can see it the minute you arrive in the airport, and the first sign I saw on my little airport shuttle coming in was from the National Association of Broadcasters, I Heart Free Radio, Fight the Performance Tax, all the way to the commercials that are inserted locally into CNN and other news networks from something called the Israel Project, ramping up the need for a war in Iran, to the parties that are thrown by the interest groups, most of which, unlike the Friends of New Orleans party, have a clear and single message, which is there's more money where this came from.
And it's hard for the press to get in.
And it's, yeah. And then there's the media party, the media convention. You know, 15,000 journalists who get to hang with each other and exchange ignorance, or shall we call it conventional ignorance, and you know, basically dish on their on the people they're covering. And then there's the rump of a political convention, you know, basically a bad TV show staged for the 1 hour of television that they still get. And the three exist in sort of uneasy juxtaposition in this city that I don't think was quite ready for this. I, as a New Orleanian, I have to say the Democrats really made a crucial mistake rejecting New Orleans' bid for this convention. It would have sent a really important message. I know why they have it here. Colorado's a state in play and Louisiana isn't, but I think they made a mistake.
Taxi Dispatcher told one of our producers last night, this is the biggest thing to hit this place since the Columbine murders, and forget about getting a taxi.
Yeah.
Of course, it's the Western state strategy. That's what they're talking about. You might be right. Maybe the New Orleans strategy would have been a little more successful.
Well, you know, what you hear down there is that they've written off Louisiana, that the involuntary exile of 100,000 New Orleanians has changed the political complexion of the state sufficiently that it's you can't put that state in play as you can Georgia and Virginia. So I think we paid the price for that.
But they could, as you pointed out, have made a lot of points about the Bush administration.
Yeah, they could. That's we understand that Governor Warner's keynote speech is going to be about the making government work. New Orleans is certainly a place, ground zero, if you will, to use a TV expression, if you will, where the desire to prove that government can't work met a disaster of profound proportions. And the Bush administration's commitment to proving, see, government doesn't work, was on evidence for all to see. And I think that it would have been a place to spotlight that commitment to bad government.
You say this is bad TV. What about Senator Kennedy, that extraordinary speech last night, his ability to make it at all, given his medical condition, and the Obama family looking like the Partridge family?
Yeah, a moment stolen from Mike Deaver in the 84 Republican convention where Ronnie talked to Nancy via satellite. You know, they learned their lessons well. Some of them. They don't learn the lesson of be on the attack, not on the defensive, you know. We may wait in vain for a mention of George W. Bush at this convention, which, by the way, it was the same strategy John Kerry rode to his ultimate demise 4 years ago. People had criticisms of Bush X'd out of their speeches at that convention, you may recall.
Yeah, in fact, Senator Kerry made it very clear he didn't want to have any attacks like that, have a positive convention. That's what this is shaping up as so far, but we don't know what Hillary Clinton's going to say tonight.
Yeah, well, that's the interesting thing is the... I think they're trying to rewrite the rules. Maybe this is a preview of what will happen to politics when, you know, we keep hearing women will change politics, and so far we haven't seen much evidence of that. But this call for catharsis in the middle of a political convention, I think, would have made Richard Daley roll over in two graves, his and you know, the nearby relative. This is not, you know, the old cliche from Washington is politics ain't beanbag, but maybe it's going to be beanbag chairs if these guys get their way. You know, we'll have some yoga and some meditation and some massage to get over the loss, you know. And the ritual repeating of the 18 million sounded a lot like, you know, trying to capture both the emotional resonance of the repeating the 6 million in the Holocaust and also reminding Democrats of the 2000 election where Al Gore won the popular vote. But lost the election. And, you know, the fact is these rules haven't changed since this game started. And these were rules that Hillary Clinton signed on to and publicly avowed. And now her supporters are calling for a different kind of politics, a gentler, more cathartic kind of politics.
People talk about history in general terms here, but there's been no specific mention of the fact that should he be elected, Barack Obama would be the first African-American to serve as president. Of course, he's going to be the first African-American to be nominated. Why no mention of that? And what about the way in which the Obama family was presented and presented itself last night?
Well, I mean, I think from the beginning, both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama in the primary wanted to be seen as more than the focus of an identity political stance. As the primaries wound down, I think they both pushed each other into an identity corner more and more. But I think Obama can say, you know, with some accuracy, he's much more than, even racially, he's much more than an African-American. He's got all sorts of background, and to call him an African-American minimizes the, quote, American story that he wants to tell, which is, you know, the many streams that make him up. I think the phrase that's going to have to be retired from the lexicon after this year is an American story, you know? Warren, do you have an American story, or were you just born here?
Harry Shearer, always good to talk with you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Through all of the security, the enormous perimeter around this convention.
Oh, man, it's so easy. It's easy access. Freeway close.
Just give yourself an hour and a half, 2 hours after you get off the bus.
Yeah.
Today's program produced in Denver by Francis Anderton and Gary Scott. Katie Cooper produced in Santa Monica with Sonia Geis and Christian Bordahl. Our managing producer is Cameron Radziner. The technical director is Charlton Thorpe and Mike Newport. Steve Herpert is chief engineer. For video vignettes from Denver, updated all day, visit kcrw.com. I'm Warren Olney. Join us again for To the Point, produced live and podcast as a co-production of KCRW Santa Monica and Public Radio International.
Public Radio International.